I think you basically have about choice about 50 producers out there. So I did, and then there's some near-term producers. There's a lot of good names. I'll name a couple.
Don Durrett, how you doing?
Pretty good. First time I've been on your show.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on board. Let's get right to it. Let's start with a 30,000 foot view here of the gold and silver precious metals markets and a few questions that I have for you in wanting to get your opinions. We've just really ripped higher in both, I want to say, since first part of March, March-ish?
20th, about March 20th.
There you go. Okay, so second or third week of March, Very good. And then I've proposed the same question to other guests, and I want to get your view on this. It just seems really, really strong and different this time. It seems like there's a couple big whales or big buyers in the market. What's your opinion on that? What's really moving it? And if there is a big buyer, who's buying?
Well, I think it's Asia who's buying. A lot of people think it's the central banks. And the central banks definitely are buying, but I think the mover who's actually moving the gold price is Asia, especially in Shanghai. So when we broke out there around right around March 20th, gold went from 2050 to, it just ripped right through there to, 2300 fairly quickly. So every week in Shanghai, Shanghai was leading, and you could see it especially on Sunday nights. And their chart, their weekly chart, it just kept going up, the green candles, for 6 weeks in a row. New York was just following that lead, if you will. And so we don't really know exactly why this happened, why China just started buying there, the end of March, and it's kind of held that price level. And in silver, they've been buying silver too. Silver's been going up. For instance, last night in Shanghai, silver closed like 3150. Yeah, so Shanghai's at 3150. It's really hard for New York to, push it much below 28, and it's right at around 28 bucks. They'd like to, but that arbitrage can only get so wide. And so, yeah, so China's pushing gold and silver. It started right in the March. Again, we don't really know why, but I think it's been building. I think this is something, I follow this very closely. I've been doing this full time since around 2019. And so on a daily basis, followed it really, really closely. And I've followed it, I was working full time, but I've been following gold price since 2004 on a daily basis. But my feeling is that we've had a correction since August of 2020, and we basically have been in a gold silver correction since then. So it's coming on almost 4 years when we get to August. So, we're well over 3.5 years into this correction. And I just feel that correction is ending here. I think it's over. I think now, we've had a lot of ups and downs during that 3.5 years. Silver would go up 27 bucks and it'd go back to 22, 27, 20. I mean, really, really wide volatility, gold and silver both. I mean, we had back in October, we were at $1,800. We went up 600 bucks. Kind of crazy how far this is the kind of volatility. But I think this is we were finally out of the correction, I believe. So now what I think what's going to happen is we're going to get higher lows and higher highs. I don't think you can expect the HUI now to go back under 200. I actually don't think it's going to go back below 225. And then gold, there's no way we're going to go back to retest at 1810 level. I don't think we'll even see the 1900s. I think 2000 is going to hold here. So my target is 2000 to 2200. And I'm thinking somewhere around the next cycle low will be the lowest we'll see. The next low of the year, I think is going to be somewhere right around 2100. I'm really hoping 2050 holds. So, it's about a 10% drop here, but a 10% drop, it's not that much, because I think the miners are going to kind of sniff out that gold isn't going to crash here. And so if the miners sniff out that it's just a correction and that we're bouncing, we're going higher, the miners will get a bid. That's why, you know, I don't think we're going to go below 225 on the HUI. So somewhere, I think 225, 250 is kind of the range. So we will dip. There's always a chance you break out, right? There's always that possibility. But I think it's only about a 10% chance that we don't go back and have this correction I'm expecting, this 10% correction. So, you know, I think it's 90% chance we'll get that correction. But I just don't think the miners, I think the lows are in for most of these stocks. I was trying to tell people, I came out with this list of names. I call them the Mormons. They're mainly silver stocks because silver is basically 2-to-1 leverage on gold. So these silver stocks are just super cheap and have tons of leverage. And I was telling people, you know, back from October until now, basically, but especially when they were before we broke out, before March, to buy these to the bottom, because they're not going to go broke and you're basically going to catch the bottom. And it was a beautiful thing. Anybody took my advice. I mean, we had Coeur go all the way down to $2, traded $2, I think, in November. A lot of these stocks, you know, you had Hecla under $4. You had Endeavor Silver trading under $1.50. You could have bought these to the bottom and did extremely well. But now I think those bottoms are in. You know, we're not, Coeur's not going back to $2. Yeah. But amazingly, in this list of Mormons, they still print as five baggers. I mean, we haven't broken out yet. The HUI, the miners are still, you know, they're barely above their neutral level. So the neutral level for me is the HUI at 250. And so we're currently about 270. Yeah, we're kind of above the neutral level, but 275, the neutral level is kind of 250 to 275. That's kind of the last zone of opportunity, if you will. Once you go 275 to 300, opportunities are slipping away. They're still there. It's kind of it's the very last zone. And then above 300, stocks are pricey, basically. So we're still in. The miners are still cheap here. They're not super pricey yet. But it's kind of a last chance kind of thing.
Yeah, got it. I want to talk about the miners. But before we do that, let me ask specifically, why do you think the low is in gold and silver? Why do you think the 2000 to 2200 level in gold will hold? And I don't know, I'd say probably, if my guess is, you're probably thinking that 2425 level on silver. I don't want to put words in your mouth, though. Why do you think those?
There's two questions, Aaron. I'll answer them both.
So please.
So the first one is the reason why I think the bottom is in here. And a lot of it is technicals. So if you look at the technical chart, I mean, it's just screaming breakout from two levels. One, you had this 7-year basing from 2013 to 2019. And then you had that, and we're kind of well above that. We've broken. So that was a zone, if you will, kind of a channel, a 7-year channel. We're well out of that channel. We've been out of that channel, actually, since 2019. We haven't really went back in. And now this breakout here is a breakout from that 3-year plus correction. So you're really breaking out of 12-year correction. I mean, it's a significant breakout, if you will. So when you have that kind of a technical breakout, it would be very unusual to break down now. Right. And in order to break down, you really need a few factors. And the number one factor is the economy. So the kryptonite for gold is a strong economy. If you have a strong economy, nobody cares about gold. The only time people talk to me about gold is when they're nervous. Mm-hmm. When they're comfortable, the topic never comes up. And for instance, right now, Wall Street is still on this risk-on trade that's been in place since 2009 and kind of kicked into gear again in 2020. And they're like, you know, we've made so much money. I mean, the S&P went all the way down to 666, scary number, right? In 2008. And now, you know, today it's sitting on 5,000. Yeah. I mean, that is one hell of a run.
Right.
And people are still riding that train. They haven't jumped off it yet. And so you still have this risk on there. We've made so much darn money. We're staying in this trade. And so that to me is kind of an indicator of a pivot point here. I think the economy, and I think that's the reason why gold is rising here, is I think that the world, if you will, because all this money, most of this money that's buying gold is in Asia, recognizes that the U.S. is in trouble here. This is a paradigm change. And the paradigm change is that the U.S. since 1945 has pretty much dictated international trade. All trade was going through the dollar, through the SWIFT system. The SWIFT system is how you transfer money across borders, and you only can use dollars. So SWIFT, it was basically, they talk about, the petrodollar, that's all through the SWIFT system. And so international trade was, 90% dollars. And now it's down like, I think it's dropped below 80% now. And wow. It's dropped. And now you had the Ukraine war, I think was, people are not really paying attention to how significant that war is for change in international trade, if you will. China and the U.S., we pretty much have been trading partners since say 1990, 2000, even under Obama, it was very friendly relations. They really didn't turn kind of prickly, if you will, until Trump got into office and Trump basically started putting on, tariffs, and that changed the whole tone. And then Biden came in, and instead of adopting Obama's free trade, he basically adopted Trump's antagonism, and it's actually gotten worse under Biden. And then now it's China's basically said, okay, enough. We're no longer your trade partner, if you will. We're basically going to now literally compete against you internationally. We're going to create this global South. We're going to partner up. We're going to expand the BRICS. We're going to partner up with Russia, with India, with Turkey, with Iran. We're going to partner up with all these people, and we're going to go toe-to-toe with you international trade-wise, and we're going to basically move away from the dollar. This is huge. And
huge. Yeah.
And the U.S. is literally dependent on exporting our dollars in order to pay. We've basically been a debt-based system since the 1980s.
Right.
And that's breaking down now. And I've been tweeting some really, really negative stuff. I tweeted today that I said that the U.S. has 6 months left. This is serious stuff I'm basically putting out there. Yeah. The U.S. has 6 months left in its hegemonic control over basically the world since 1945. Mm-hmm. And the next election, and the only way that can be maintained is if the U.S. economy is number one. Now, the U.S. GDP right now is 25% of global GDP. Right. You look at how large our stock market is compared to the rest of the world. If you take all of Asia, all of their stocks, all of Asia, it's not even half of the United States, which is amazing. I mean, you're talking Japan, China, South Korea, India, take all of them. They're not even half of our size, right. But they make all the stuff. The reason why our economy, it's overinflated, if you will, is because of the debt bubble. We've been living off of debt for all these years. We've expanded our debt to $35 trillion, and it's expanded our stock market, which is, it's based on, Steph Pombo said it's basically based on air.
Yeah.
But there's nothing holding the thing up. And so my point is that the reason why I'm coming out with these really harsh comments is that the reason why I say we only have 6 months left is because in the next 6 months, we're going to go into recession. And simultaneously to that, we're going to have an election that's going to be unbelievably divisive for this country. And so the combination of a recession, we can't afford a recession because we are too leveraged and we are too dependent on debt. We have a $1.5 trillion deficit. So we have to borrow, starting in Q3, we're going to have to borrow $280 billion every single month, which is unbelievable. And then when we go into recession, that debt, that deficit will actually go up, because the way that government spending works, whenever you have a recession, the federal government has to help the states, and they can't deny the states. that basically if the states have more money for unemployment, more money for healthcare, the federal government has to pay the states. So the deficit will expand under recession, and they can't stop spending because they're stuck, they're trapped into this fiscal dominance where the fiscal dominance is literally holding the economy up. All the fiscal spending is holding the economy up. GDP would be negative right now if our deficit was $500 billion. Yeah. Take that $1 trillion and you rug pull it out of the economy, you'd be in recession.
You'd be in recession really quick. So let's game this out here. And I'm agreeing, and I'm following you, and I'm agreeing with you, or I should say I agree with you. Really, this is what's confusing to me, and I don't know what to make of this. Let's assume for a second that the economy, and I believe this to be true, but the economy is slowing down and recession is on the horizon. Stock markets rolling over. How does that affect gold and silver?
So what gold is really waiting for, and I've been doing this for 20 years, what it's been waiting for is the only thing that gold really drives it, if you will, is the fear trade. You only buy gold when you're afraid. The only time you line up at a coin shop, this happened in 1980, is if you're afraid. It's like, I got to, it could be FOMO too, but it's a lot of it is fear. It's like, I got to have some of that stuff. It's the only thing that's going to save me. You know, my dollars are, that's not working. That's not going to work. I got to get my hands on gold. And so that, I call it the fear trade. And so we've had the fear trade in gold twice. Now, the first time was from 1971 to 1980. So what drove that fear trade was inflation, but in tandem with the economy being very weak because the U.S. was no longer, it was losing its mercantilistic edge, if you will. So from 1945 to 1970, the U.S., because after World War II, Europe was devastated, Japan was devastated, Asia was kind of non-existent. So we didn't have any competition. So when we started making stuff from 1945 to 1970, we didn't have any competition. Competition really didn't even start until like in the 1960s. So the U.S. had this huge, huge advantage over the rest of the world. So we were generating wealth. And then 1970, then, it all kind of broke. So we had two big oil rises, early 70s and late 70s. You had this inflation, basically you had uncertainty. Some people would call it an uncertainty trade, but I kind of call it a fear trade. But, and then in tandem with that, so gold went from $35 in 1971 to $850 in 1980. 35 to 850, a massive move. And gold was outperforming the stock market that whole decade. Well, and then it died, and then basically the fear trade died in the 1980s. And so you had 20 years from 1980 to 2000 where gold and silver did nothing. It was basically, there was no fear because the economy was doing well. And so I don't need any stinking gold, right? And then 2000, you had the dot-com bubble bust and you had 9/11. That ignited another uncertainty / fear trade from 2001 all the way to 2011, another 10 years. In that time, gold went from $250 to $1,935, another big, big move. And gold outperformed the stock market for 10 years. And now we've had another, so from 2009, now we had 15 years, somewhere in there, another basically where gold did nothing for the last 10 years. And because you didn't have that uncertainty trade, debt risk trade. So now we're going to get ready to have our third uncertainty / fear trade into gold. But this one is going to be the mother of all fear trades, because this time the U.S. bond market is going to break. And when the bond market breaks, that's when Eckster's pyramid kicks in. And the Eckster's pyramid, this was named after a guy named Eckster. He basically created a pyramid of assets with the highest quality at the very bottom, the inverted pyramid at the very bottom. And then higher, as you, the pyramid, the risk increases. And basically what he said was as uncertainty increases, people move down the risk assets. Well, we've never, ever had to move from the very bottom, which is basically U.S. bonds, U.S. treasuries, and U.S. dollars. People have always been happy in those. So So they've never had to move down into that gold trade. So the gold trade, gold's about $14 trillion total, but it's only about $4 or $5 trillion for bullion and coins. So if you think of it that way, there's only about that much. And the overall economy has about $250 trillion in stocks and bonds globally. So that you got 250 versus four. So all those assets, they don't have very much, there's not a lot of room there. And so if people want to move out, and this is the reason why I'm in gold and silver, because I've always believed that the US debt bubble would eventually pop, because I believe in Austrian economics, where you can't spend to prosperity, you can't borrow to prosperity. At a certain point, you know, von Mises basically said you only have two choices. You either pay off your debt or it pops. And I've always believed the debt bubble will pop. I think that's going to happen very soon, because at a certain point, your money printer breaks, because you can't just monetize everything you need, because that creates hyperinflation. So if the government, US Treasury loans bonds out, it doesn't create inflation if the people that buy those bonds already are using money that's already in circulation. Where it creates inflation is when you print money. That's when the Fed prints money to buy the bonds. Then they're expanding money supply. And that's what they can't do. And now we already have inflation. And inflation is basically the kryptonite for MMT, the kryptonite for this idea that we can print to infinity. Right. And everybody knows you can't print to infinity, and everybody's starting to figure that out. And so when the debt bubble, I think we're close to that debt bubble popping, and I think that's the reason why gold's going up. And I think that's the reason why gold is going to look like such a good asset going forward from here.
Okay. So then, I mean, there's so much stuff there, and probably for the sake of time, probably my number one question is, and this is what not keeps me up at night, but this is what's the most confusing thing to me, because I could see it going either way. At the end of the day, gold and silver stocks are stocks, right? So the S&P rolls over. Wouldn't gold and silver stocks roll over as well, in your opinion?
No, I mentioned this before. And the reason why I don't expect it to happen is because I think people will recognize that gold is not going to crash here. The only thing that holds up gold and silver stocks is margins. If they don't have strong margins, they're not going to perform. But if gold outperforms the stock market, then you get good margins. So it's all about, for gold and silver stocks, the only thing that matters is margins. That's it. It's the only thing. I chase free cash flow.
Right. That's a good answer. I mean that good answer in the sense it makes sense why your thesis would hold up. And I'm inclined in that as well. I just see, like, I remember 2007, 2008 very, very well, when everything tanked. And gold tanked very, very briefly, and then it ran like a bat out of hell. But I guess what I'm trying to say is gold stocks really tanked. And I remember because I was in it. And so I'm just wondering if we're having a 2.0 of that or not. But
yeah, I actually thought that's what we were going to see. I didn't think gold would lead here. What I thought was going to happen is that, you know, gold would not break out like it has, like stay under 2000, for instance. I thought gold was going to stay under 2000. Now there's always different, you know, possibilities, right?
Sure.
It's hard to predict the future, but one of the possibilities was gold, you know, breaking out, which it has done. But I thought the most likely outcome would be during this correction, this 3+ year correction, that gold would basically was trapped because of the risk on trade. Since we had the risk on trade, gold's trapped. Nobody cares about gold. Economy's growing. Gold would be trapped, and then, since it was trapped, once the stock market started selling off, I thought that the HUI would go under 200. So I thought we were going to see that type of scenario, that we were going to see stock sell off and gold and silver miners sell off. I did think that was going to be the outcome, but in early April, I basically said, well, that's not going to happen because gold just broke out. So once gold broke out, and then when silver confirmed and silver got above 28, it actually traded above 29. I was like, okay, those guys are showing us that we don't really have to worry about that 2008 scenario happening again. Like I said, I think that the bottom's in for the miners. I mean, if you buy the miners today, yeah, there's a really good chance that you could be catching a falling knife and losing, 10, 15% of paper losses. But in a miner, a 10 to 15% loss in a paper is nothing.
It's a long time too. Yeah.
Stocks can rip higher in one week. So when Newmont got to 29, I was like,
oh, that was a buy.
Wall Street didn't buy it.
It downgraded him.
It blew my mind. There was no mark. There was no volume. So Newmont's at $29 and it has no volume. It was blowing my mind. So I started tweeting about it. I was showing, I was basically showing everybody that how cheap this stock is. You can't lose money buying Newmont at $29. Unless you're a 6 month trader. But if you're going to hold Newmont for 1, 2, 3, 4 years, you're not going to lose.
Green opportunity. I think Druckenmiller bought it, if I'm not mistaken.
He did. It was the bell ringing. So there's been two bells ring. One was Newmont at 29, and the other was last week when I think it was Thursday. On Thursday, that was the other bell ringing when you had, this big move with gold. Okay, so silver went up $1 on Monday and then $1, I think, on Thursday. Might have been Wednesday. That second move was the bell ringing, in my opinion. That was ding, ding, ding. That's when you really saw that they're getting ready to run here. We're going to have higher lows. We don't really have to worry now about a big correction.
Yeah. I think probably the most important thing that you said and that I got into this, and hopefully that our listeners would cue in, is just the whole Asia buying, because I really agree with your thesis, because if they weren't buying, I think we would be, because the U.S. isn't buying, because we're not buying.
Exactly. We're not.
And all this is happening, and yet gold, and that's why it just air quotes here, but feels, and I hate the word to use, I don't want to base thought or actions on feeling, but it just feels so much different. There is so much strength in this market. And so what I'm trying to say is, I agree with you. And I think that's the most encouraging thing, is that the buying's actually coming from overseas.
So. Yeah, you use the word strain. I really feel that the fear level this year will exceed 2008. And in 2008, it was off the charts.
I thought I had to go build a cabin out in the woods in 2000.
So on a scale, it was like in 2008, the fear level was like a 9, right? It was way up there. Well, guess what? It's going to actually be higher this time.
Yeah.
Well, and the reason why it's going to be higher is because people are going to realize that the Fed doesn't have the tools to fix this.
Yeah.
That the Fed overplayed its hand and got itself in a big, big prop, big, big bind. They raised rates, and I've been saying this, they should have never raised rates beyond 3%.
Yeah. Well, they raised rates so aggressively, and that things break. I mentioned that to several friends. It's like you raise rates like they did and things start breaking really quick.
Well, once you go above 3%, the economy doesn't work.
Yeah.
Because we're debt based.
Yep.
And so once you're above 3, you're just, all you're doing is just creating damage. You just damage. And look at all these commercial real estate buildings that sold for pennies on the dollar. That's damage.
That's sitting right now.
There's so much damage being done that there's so many families right now that can't pay their bills because interest rates are too high. There's so much damage being done right now. People, it's like a wrecking ball.
Yeah.
That's where they're making their big mistake, is they think that this is the U.S. economy can handle it, and that this is all we need, this to control inflation. The reason why they raised rates so high so fast is they want their tools back. Now, what are their tools? If you go back to 2008 and 2009, their tools were twofold. Number one, lower race to zero, which they do, right? That's a powerful tool. They don't have that today. They want it back. Tool number two is they want to be able to print as much money as they need.
By buying bonds.
And they can't do that now. Yeah. They lost both of those tools and they're trying to get them back, but they overplayed their hand. They raised rates too high, too fast, too long. And now the damage has been done. And now they're not going to have the tools to restart the economy. And simultaneous to that, the banking system has been thoroughly damaged by these high rates because they're sitting on all these bonds that are underwater and they're not coming back.
Right.
It's the only way they come back is if rates go to zero, which they can't get back to zero.
Right.
So it's a train wreck in progress. And Wall Street and the mainstream media has basically fooled everybody into believing that the economy is strong and that we're fine.
Yeah. We got a handful of stocks holding up the whole thing.
Yeah. And right now, Wall Street economists are like 75% no recession.
Yeah.
Like, we're fine. I mean, we're not going to have a recession. We're good. And so once things turn, if you will, people are going to realize, uh-oh, what can the Fed do here?
Yeah.
What can they do? And then the federal government's got they're going to end up this year, I think, close to $2 trillion deficit. It's like, oh my God, we got a $2 trillion deficit. Our interest payments are over $1 trillion. What the heck are we going to, how are we going to get out of this mess? What's the path forward here? Yeah.
The numbers are so big. They've gotten so big. They're meaningless almost.
Well, the problem here is inflation really is the undoing. It's the destroyer of economies. So you have the cost of living now is literally ripped out the heart of the middle class.
Yeah.
You know, they're living paycheck to paycheck. They're trying to figure out how to pay their bills and it's not going to improve. Because now we're in stagflation land. Yeah. So not only are costs not going down, but costs are actually going to incrementally go higher.
Right.
Get worse. And so, yeah, there's no way out of this. And it's basically started, you know, like in the 1970s, it actually is when it started. There was waves around this, but we didn't choose them. We didn't choose the hard way out. We chose the easy way out, which is basically to use your credit card.
Yeah.
And so now we're there. And like I said, that's why I say we have 6 months left. Enjoy your summer, because once we get to November and that election hits,
things will get interesting.
We're leaving. In my last news letter, I said, we're leaving Kansas.
Yeah.
We're going, this is a new era, new something, you know, we're going some in a new place and the next few years are not going to be any fun because it's all about transition. And what's going to happen here is we're going to transition away from Washington and back to the states.
That's a good thing. That's a good
transition. It's a great thing.
It's a painful transition, but it's a good transition.
Yes, it's a very good transition because we know that Washington doesn't have our interest.
Correct.
Then our states more likely will. Our states will be more like elected representatives. And so we know that's what we have to do. It's our only option, our only choice. But the bad thing is it's once you start down that road, if you will, there's no way back.
Yeah. Well, on that note, let's talk some gold stocks here. We had a good breakout, or you mentioned I'm trying to go back about 20 minutes. You're saying we had a breakout. You don't think we're going to get lower. Yeah. Work that out for me. What are you looking at technically? And what sectors are you looking at?
I think that we're kind of at the, we only have a few more months here to buy stocks cheap, if you will. So I did 5 videos over the last 2 weeks. I did 2 on developers and I did 3 on producers. And so people can go and watch those videos and get tons of information on Yeah, no, it's not on Gold Stock Data. It's on my YouTube channel.
Okay, so I'll
just search for Don Durrett and you'll find videos. And you click on videos, you'll see the last 5.
And I'll have to link to that. just so you know, everybody knows.
Okay, awesome. And so, but I, the one, you know, I mentioned the Mormons earlier. I still think that those, I like to be overweight producers, because I think that you're going to make 80% of your money in producers, because producers can grow three ways. And so one is, of course, you know, they're basically going to participate as the price of gold goes higher. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing they can do is they can, actually there are three ways, four ways. Then they can basically develop mines. So they can explore, I'll put exploration and development together, explore and develop and build mines on their own using the capital from their free cash flow. Mm-hmm. And the last way they can grow is through acquisitions. And the acquisition way, they can grow quickly and fast doing that. So, okay, so let's say that you're a company and your share price is literally kind of dependent on the price of gold. But if you go and acquire another company, then your free cash flow is going to expand. And then you're basically going to get more leverage and you're basically going to blow up, especially if that acquisition is very accretive, if you will. If you acquire a company for very cheap, that company is very, you know, there's a lot of those out there. You acquire a company that has like 10x upside, 5x upside, you bring it in and boom, you know, you can grow that way. So producers have this amazing ability to grow, add production growth, if you will. You know, developers and explorers don't have that kind of leverage. And so I want to be overweight producers. And so I've been kind of trying to tell people to kind of focus on these Mormons, these undervalued stocks, make sure you own those. So the Mormons currently, they all still print as five baggers, but that's at $100 silver. But, you know, maybe we don't get to $100 silver. Maybe we only get to 75, 80. So maybe you only get, you know, 3-5 baggers. But the one thing, the gold miners, interestingly, I've been valuing them at $3,000 gold. And I think that's too conservative. I think we need to pump that up to $3,500 gold. So a lot of these gold miners look really good at $3,500 gold. So I don't have those numbers because I'm still using $3,000 gold. But if I use $3,000 gold and I find a 3-bagger, it's probably a 5-bagger at $3,500 gold. So you can watch my videos and see, you know, you can basically on the gold miners, you can basically see, well, Don's actually being conservative there. The numbers he's using is at $3,000 gold. So there are a lot of producers right now that have a lot of upside still. You're still early. Until the HUI gets above 300, so we're currently at 270, so that's about another 10% move here. Until it gets above 300, I think there's going to be opportunity to buy a lot of producers. And I think there's about, I would say as many as 50, but definitely 30 producers that I think are cheap. But somewhere between 30 and 50, I think are still somewhat cheap, if you will. But that's going to shrink. I mean, that's going to go down to 25 fairly quickly. And then it'll shrink even more. But I think today, I think you basically have about choice about 50 producers out there. So I did, and then there's some near-term producers. There's a lot of good names. I'll name a couple. One is Adriatic, just got into production and they haven't really been repriced up yet. I think Adriatic, because if they ramp up, if they don't have problems on the ramp up, their ASIC is like $10. If they hit that ASIC number, they're going to generate a lot of free cash flow. That one's really interesting. Another one, Avino. I just have always loved Avino. It's just so super cheap. I mean, I just think Avino is so cheap that they'll be acquired. Once silver gets to $35 silver, I'll be really shocked if they don't get acquired, just because their upside is just silly cheap. So they currently produce 2.5 million ounces of silver equivalent. They're targeting 7 to 8 million ounces by 2028. So they're tripling production and they're valued at $100 million. They have 350 million ounces of silver equivalent, and they're only producing 2.5. So they have all this silver equivalent, and they're going to turn that into production. So I think it's easily 8 million. There's easily 8 million. Their properties usually have 8 million by 2028. So a company like Silvercrest could go in and acquire them Silvercrest, I think, producing 10, and they can almost double their production with a really small. I mean, you could get a Avena right now. They 80% of their shares are retail. So if Silvercrest goes in there today and makes an offer at a 50% premium and pays $150, there's no way shareholders would turn that down. Right. So Avena could buy it. Silvercrest could buy 8 million ounces of production with very low capex, by the way. It's unbelievable how low their capex is to go from 2.5 to 8. We're talking like less than $50 million. So they could do it for $150 million. They can buy 8 million ounces. So I got to believe someone's going to go in there and buy Avena. So that's my problem with Avena. It's super, super cheap. But the one thing about it, you're going to double your money. I mean, the downside risk here of Avena is very low.
Minimal. Yeah.
So another one is that I think is super cheap is Fresnillo. Fresnillo just hasn't gotten a bid. I mean, they're a 60 million ounce silver producer, which is I think they're number one, and their valuation is silly cheap. They print as a 10 bagger at $100 silver. So that's one that just hasn't gotten a bid. So those are three silver miners, take a look at, but, all of the Mormons are probably cheap. I might as well list those. So we have, you know, Fresnillo is one then, and then we have Hecla, then we have Coeur, we have Pan American, we have First Majestic, and we have Silvercrest, and then we have Hochschild, and then we have Endeavor Silver. So those are the eight Mormons, and all of those stocks are still cheap. And then on top of those, we had Avena and Adriatic, and then we have, I added Aya to the list. So I guess that was nine now. So we have, Aya is a thing of beauty. So the time I'm going to talk about Aya. Jeez, I love this stock. So Aya, they started off with this mine called Zagounder, you know, high grade. And they started, you know, drilling it. And they've taken their time. They haven't diluted. They're only currently mining 2.5 million ounces a year. But this year they expand to 8. So it's taken them a while to expand Zagounder, and it's growing in size. So Zagounder is basically 8 million. It'll probably grow to 10 long term. They're still finding silver. It's high grade. And that's not their biggest mine. They just found another one called Boumadine. Boumadine just came out with their second resource. They drilled 100,000 meters on Boumadine this year. For this year, they're going to drill 100,000 meters. It's already 350 million ounces of silver equivalent. Now, Zagounder is basically all silver, but Boumadine is silver and gold. It has a lot of gold. And then I think lead and zinc, it has all of them. But it's 400 grams per ton, 410 grams per ton of silver equivalent. So the grade's fine. But it's 350 and it's growing. So you got Zagounder, which I think is going to be 8 to 10 long life. And Boumadine is going to be more. It's going to be 10 to 12. So you're looking at a 20 million ounce silver producer, and they're only valued about 1.5. And it's in Morocco, which is a good location. And that's not all they have. They actually have two gold mines that they're drilling as well. They have a great management team. They have high insiders. So I recently added Aya to my Mormons list. And the one thing, though, we don't know when they're going to get Boumadine into production. Probably not for 3 years. So it's kind of a three-year bet. There's a lot of these silver mines that are three-year bets before you're going to get paid, you know, what you want, if you will. But Aya is a thing of beauty. The other silver stock that I haven't mentioned that I love is Go Gold. Go Gold is another, it's in Mexico that they're getting ready to build their, so they're currently mining a tailings project called Parel that's about 2 million ounces a year. And now they're going to add Los Ricos South. They're going to build it first. The capex is pretty low, about 120 million. The permanent now is underground mine, so that they will be able to permit. And then they're going to build Los Ricos North. So that's another 3-year deal. But Go Gold and Boumadine, I mean, they have two really good development stories there. The other development story I said I'm not going to finish is Discovery. Now, Discovery, can they permit this thing? They got 1 billion ounces of silver in Mexico, 1 billion. They're starting off, they're only going to mine 600 million of that. But they could, it's unbelievable. It's like 33 million ounces a year for 20 years. It's like, it's kind of crazy land. That's 660 million ounces. But that's silver equivalent, 1.2 billion ounces silver equivalent. But it's open pit. Can they permit it?
Yeah, that's the thing.
If you want to roll your dice, if they get permitted. But it's cheap right now because nobody thinks they're going to permit it. But if you want to roll the dice, they have high insiders. Eric Sprott owns 23%, I think. He's not selling. So if they get the permit, that thing's worth a fortune.
Yeah, that's a tier one asset, as Rick Rule would say. Yep. You have a event coming up this week with our mutual friend, John Fenech. Tell us about that if people want to participate in that and learn more about what you do and how to invest in these assets.
Yeah. So, John Fenech, when I was living in Las Vegas, he would come to Las Vegas and he would call me and ask me to come, you know, I'd go have lunch with him. So we became friends. And then, he said he was going to do a YouTube video and I said, I'll do it with you. And so we started this back in August, we started doing these monthly YouTube videos where we interview CEOs. We do 30 minutes of macro and 30 minutes of interviewing CEOs. And then he started doing, he did a webinar like last month. And then he asked me if I would do the webinar with him. I said, oh, sure. And so we're doing these webinars together. We'll see how this is the first one. So it's Thursday at 2 p.m. Pacific time. And so the one thing that you're going to get out of that is I never go into depth on how to analyze mining stocks because it's really boring. I tried to do it one time and the guy cut me off. I mean, it's just boring as hell. So at least, you know, if you're interested, it's not super boring if you're interested, but it's boring because I'm basically going, you know, detail by detail on what to look for, right? But I'm going to do that. I'm going to do for producers, developers, and explorers. I'm going to basically tell you what to look for. And that alone is going to be worth the price of admission. I think it's about $100. It's going to be an hour and a half long, I believe.
Yep. So you and John.
Thursday, 2 o'clock Pacific.
Thursday, 2 o'clock Pacific. I do have a link and I'll put it in the show notes below for anybody that wants to participate. Don, any final words or do you want to, I guess, what's your outlook your outlook after we go get out of whatever we're going
through? Yeah. Yeah. I will kind of follow up with kind of reiterate kind of some of the things that I said. I do think that we have a short window for, you know, buying these stocks before they basically double from here. And then once they double from here, I mean, you know, you're going to lose a lot of upside. So you have a few months, I think. But I think the selling will begin on Wall Street before July. It could happen. It could start here in May, but, you know, basically we're talking like the next 8 weeks. I think the selling will begin on Wall Street. I think it's going to sniff out this recession. It's coming. We're seeing more and more data of jobs slowing. If you will, Indeed actually did layoffs today. You know, what's Indeed doing layoffs if the economy is strong? It doesn't really sync up, right? And so I think we're going to see, you know, Wall Street will roll over here. I don't think we're going to see a new all-time high, even though we're bouncing right on the door of an all-time high here on the Dow, the NASDAQ, and the S&P. I don't think we're going to see one. I think the selling's going to begin. And so, you know, once the selling begins, then you're going to start to see this downward pressure on gold and silver. And so that's where you're going to get that dip. That's going to be your last opportunity to buy, I think. And then once gold bounces, I think everybody's going to realize that gold's going. I think my target for this year was 2,400 for gold and 40 for silver. But now that we've broken out here, I've revised that. Now my target is 2,700 for gold. I'm sticking with $40 silver for this year. So I think we're going to end this year at those numbers. So very bullish. I'm not sure what the HOI is going to get to by the end of the year, but I think 400 to 450 definitely looks reasonable. So I think we're in a big mirror. Final thing I'll say is I think that next year, 2025, is going to be much better for gold in the miners, 2025. So I think next year is when you get the mania phase where we get crazy land. That's when basically you see Pan American Silver. I didn't ever mention that. Basically, maybe in this year, like 35, somewhere in there, and just ripped to like 80. I mean, just we're going to see some. I think next year is actually going to be a better year than this year for gold and silver in the miners. That's my expectation.
So, and FOMO will kick in probably. Yeah. All right. Don, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And I will put goldstockdata.com in the show notes, as well as the YouTube videos that you mentioned, as well as the link to your webinar with our friend, John Fenwick.
Yeah. Are you on Twitter?
I am.
Okay. So send me a DM or, you know, send me, when you email me, let me know what your handle is, and then DM me when you tweet it out, and then I'll retweet it. I find it's better if I retweet you, that way people will join you.
Yeah.
We want your handle to be part of the tweet, right?
Yeah. I appreciate that. So yeah, I'll send it right out to you, man.
I'm up to 41,000 followers now.
I know, you're killing it.
I'm doing well on Twitter. So we'll send you some followers.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks, Don. Have a great night. I'll put this all out tonight.
Thank you. It was a good one.